And I would like to open up my agenda. Before we start, I would like to encourage anybody that would like to speak during public comments to please fill out a yellow slip in the back of the room, indicate whether it's for public speaking or for a particular item on the agenda. You'll have a few minutes to do that, and then you can bring them up and give them to Janet. It's not mandatory, but it just makes it easier when going through things to know. And those names will be called first to speak. At this point, I would ask that we all stand and perform the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Janet, can you call roll call for us, please?
Certainly. President Graves.
Here.
Vice President Simon.
Here.
Treasurer Dawson.
Here.
Director Pifo.
Here.
Director Tetro.
Here.
Thank you. Public comments. Are there any public comments? Any yellow slips? Didn't show up yet, huh?
No, okay. Yellow slips yet.
Any public comments? Going once? Going twice? Okay. Area agency reports and presentations. Who do we have? Oh. Lieutenant Burris. Hello, sir.
Hi, how are you all?
How are you this evening?
Fantastic. Thank you.
To review that report, I'll just go over the stats for the month from the deputies at Delta Station. They arrested 24 individuals, wrote 97 police reports, did 27 field interviews, wrote 10 criminal citations, 37 traffic citations, 23 parking citations, and towed 9 vehicles. The obvious thing I think that people will probably have a question about is the shooting at the party. When I look at the activities in Discovery Bay, my thoughts typically are, well, is this something that we can control? Is this something that's a threat to the general community in Discovery Bay? And this shooting at the party was a teenage party, unsupervised, alcohol and whatnot involved, and outsiders came in, were not allowed into the party, they shot into the house. Unfortunately, 2 days prior at unincorporated Brentwood, which is also mine, we had almost the same exact event. We don't believe that there's a link. We do have 2 suspects in custody in the Brentwood shooting. I talked to the investigation sergeant tonight. They're still working on the Discovery Bay shooting. I don't feel as though that's anything that any of us need to sort of become more aware of. You're not having unsupervised teenage parties at your house, you're probably pretty safe from that sort of thing. Unfortunately, it's a trend that we see. I have a teenage son who I have harped and harped and harped about going to parties with no adults present. And one of the weekends that I happened to look in the paper, there were 3 Antioch. I mean, they were almost identical articles, separate incidents, unsupervised teenage parties where people weren't admitted or they were thrown out and then they shot at the participants in the party. So I don't feel as though that's something that we need to really become more vigilant about, other than, you know, there are parties, there's party houses. I know people approach me all the time. It's difficult for us to track or to sort of, because typically it's not a problem until the party is already in full swing, and then it becomes a problem for us. But if you see these things, if you have houses that you're concerned about, you can let us know. We can do work upon the houses and see if there's anything we can do. I'm not saying that there always will be, but at least if we're aware of it, then we can take steps to address anything that we possibly can.
In this case, it was an unsupervised party with kids and alcohol, and there was also
crime that took place beyond the kids and alcohol part of it. Can the homeowners be held liable for anything criminal?
They could in the event, for instance, a couple years ago, the young man in Moraga that died from drinking alcohol at a party. There certainly is criminal charges that followed up with that between everybody from the, you know, they go, because they can track kegs of beer and they can actually track part alcohol all the way back to whoever sold it. So in those kinds of things, typically stuff like that becomes as much civil as it is criminal. Unfortunately, it's just that, you know, I tried to explain to my son, you know, when I was a kid, you could do it and there weren't, you know, there's 10 people at the party and they send 10 text messages to who send 10 text messages, and the next thing you know, 1,000 people know about what was intended to be a little get together of close friends with no parents there to intervene. So
I guess I'm just saying, as a community, if we could somehow put pressure on the homeowners not to allow it,
if there's
it wouldn't happen.
If there's an association involved, there's always, you know, if you have a house that becomes a constant problem where it starts to impact property values and that, I know collectively there's been a couple of opportunities for me to become involved with homeowners that were willing to get involved and actually got together, hired an attorney, sent letters and things like that, talking about, you know, deteriorated property value, safety of their families and things like that. And in each case that I have seen that, it worked. But it takes a collective effort on the part of neighbors who are willing to get involved. And unfortunately, that's the exception rather than the rule. Yes.
Yeah, Mike, thank you for that report. On the written report, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I see one interfering with public officer. Mm-hmm. What's that one about?
What's a report number on that one?
Let's see.
Right there on the left-hand side.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure if it's up or down. I think it's it ends in 2363. Right on the cover page, about 7 down.
3 up from the bottom.
Yeah, that was an event where the subject had a warrant and ran from the deputy. Mm. So they were booked on the warrant and then interfering with an officer.
Okay.
Of course,
okay. Thank you.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
You guys, 2 cars showed up on Cutter Loop a week and a half ago. Around the corner from me, and I don't see anything that's just cut a loop on here. Is it possible that they show up and it doesn't make the...
Yeah, this report reflects anything that a police report was written on, so if they...
Nothing culminated from whatever what the call
was. Nothing
the
was juicy
or whatever.
Enough for them to have to document.
Okay.
Yes.
Any other questions of the board?
Mr. Simon Street was quiet this
morning.
One's good for your street, though.
Burglary residential.
Yeah.
You got to get further away from your house when you do that stuff.
I'm telling you.
Hey, Brian?
Mike, what's the difference in between vandalism felony and vandalism misdemeanor?
The amount of damage. Anything over $400 is considered a felony.
Any other questions from the public for the lieutenant? Thank you for your time.
Okay,
appreciate
you.
It, Mike. Thanks for coming. Okay, Battalion Chief, you're up.
Hello, I'm Battalion Chief Ferrari.
Did you look into this for me? Would you make a note of this for me?
I've got
July.
New faces. So I'll give you my rundown. Your fire department is a consolidation of several smaller fire departments, fire districts, fire protection districts that is consolidated into one county organization. No one fire station is a standalone entity, and basically what that means is if you get a fire in your house of any significance, you will have fire engines coming from as far away as Brentwood, Oakley, Knightson, and depending on the size of your house, those of you who live in those 10,000 square foot mansions, you'll probably be getting fire engines from Antioch also. With that said, it's really important that if you have a fire, that you dial 911 and don't try and drive down to a fire station. If you have a cell phone and you dial 911, if you have a medical emergency or fire, you need to dial 933-1313, and we'll be putting that out and flying that here, sending that to all the different board of directors. If you dial 911 from your cell phone, it gets routed to Vallejo. And Vallejo CHP is so busy that Santa Claus will have come and gone before you'll ever get to talk to who you actually need to talk to. And that's, I'm not making fun of CHP, but it just takes, some can take up to 15, 20 minutes, and that is a recorded fact. So with that being said, unfortunately here, we've closed two fire stations in Discovery Bay, one in downtown Discovery Bay on Discovery Bay Boulevard, and one in Byron, California. And with that being said, July 16th was the date of those two fire station closures, so it's kind of skewed the numbers that I normally present. So we've had, for the month of July, two structure fires, one vehicle fire, 10 vegetation fires, one boat fire, a significant boat fire that happened in Discovery Bay, two exterior fires, one smoke investigation, one fire alarm, five auto accidents, one boat accident, 34 EMS or medical calls, one lift assist, and one DUI. Station 58, which was in downtown Discovery Bay, from July 1st to July 16th, ran three structure fires, two vegetation fires, one boat fire, two fire alarms, 14 EMS calls, and one lift assist. So between the three fire stations that were staffed between July 1st and July 16th, they ran a total of 100 calls. Normally, I don't give the stats for what Station 57 does. Is anybody interested?
Jeff, what was the phone number again?
933-1313.
That's just 925.
Yeah, 925, and that will put you directly into Contra Costa County Regional Fire Communications Center, and you will get a fire dispatcher. So if you have a boat accident, you observe a boat accident with injuries from your boat, that is the number that you should dial. If you dial 911 from your cell phone, that will not be as productive as you would like.
933-1313. Yes. Thank you.
So, station, your fire station has ran a total of 100 calls. Does anybody have any questions?
Let's start with the board. Does the board have any questions?
No.
David? Brian? Thank you. Rich?
Yeah. This number you just gave out, is that for medical? Also,
yes.
Any kind of a normal 911,
yes.
You know that number yes. Says, okay.
Structure fires, auto accidents, boat fires, boating accidents.
Just from a cell phone, if you're on your landline,
yes.
Dial 911.
Yes. Well, if you were from your landline, if you dial that number, you will also get a 911 dispatcher, a fire dispatcher, but I don't believe that they can necessarily track that number, reverse track that number.
Okay.
Walter?
I believe that fatal accident on Byron Highway was in Contra Costa County, is that correct?
Yes.
So you guys responded to that, is
yes.
That correct? So with two stations in Far East County, I would assume that had a great impact on move-ups, and because two of those stations, you know, that were closed would have responded to that, I would have thought.
Unfortunately, the severity of that accident, I haven't seen an accident like that out here since the mid-80s. But when you get an accident like that, two people on a fire engine have limited resources and can very limited, really cannot do very much between managing the scene, triaging the patients, or anything else. Fire engines need to have a minimum of three people on them. So when we had that accident, we still sent two engine companies and a battalion chief. The times did meet our LAFCO standards, and we actually got people there quicker than we normally would have because we had more people on scene.
I mean, still, you had to move in from Brentwood and so on. And to me, I guess, you know, if you had the two stations that were still open, I mean, you would have had two engines, four people there, right?
You would have had one engine there quicker, but that would have one engine would have
still
been overwhelmed and would have been ineffective. But the two engines that we sent with the three people on it was much more effective than the seven.
Well, my understanding of that particular accident was that the first station, that the Byron station was actually out on a field, on a grass fire with their brush unit, and didn't even respond out of Bixler. The first unit to get to that accident was actually out of Brentwood. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you know what the response time on that was?
I have not researched that since
okay.
that happened. But what was your question again, sir?
Sorry.
The second emergency was to happen, fire at my house, so it would have been 30 minutes.
Unfortunately, though, if we had a medical, even when we actually had that situation. And we had two houses on fire, and we had to, because we only have two people on engine duty, we actually had to send two engines to CPR call, and it delayed the response to the two houses on fire on North Point. So we can all what if this to the never ending,
yes.
But unfortunately, financially, we can't put two fire engines in each station with four people on it like we would really like to do.
And that being said, let me make a comment at this point, and that is that this is probably not the person or the time or the place to express what we all know is to be true and what we all feel that we've been abandoned out here in East County with regards to the proper thing. He represents the fire department. He didn't make the decision. The board made the decision. He's got to act within that. I'd let this go today, but in the future, I don't think it's fair to the chief to continue to bombard him with their concerns. I'm not invalidating the concerns. I'm as concerned as everybody else is. I personally believe they closed the wrong station. I think the downtown stations should still be open, because then you can react to both ends of Discovery Bay. To leave open the further station out doesn't make any sense to me. But I didn't make that decision, neither did he. But I let it go today. But folks, let's try to remember that what he's here to do is provide us with information about what happens, and questions about that are fine. But let's not try to get too much into the politics of the ECC CFPD. We can attack Chris for that. Pat.
Okay, I just need an answer to what you said. Can you tell me how the
Chris
fire department responds to drunk driving? I mean, was it an accident with drunk driving? I mean, that doesn't fit the fire scene.
And I'm gonna say this, the personnel that you have that serve your community darn near kill themselves to do
right.
the best job possible. It's a subject that I'm passionate about, the quality of work that our people do, and as underpaid and understaffed as they are. So with that being said, they were in Brentwood, and they were on their way back, and they noticed a drunk driver pull off in front of them, and they followed that driver down Balfour, and because we had a double shooting in Brentwood, so we had resources tied up in Brentwood and CHP, and as the sheriff's office had resources tied up, they followed the vehicle down Balfour. When it started to make a left turn to get on the bypass, they felt that the speeds had increased and the car had been playing curb bumper ball all the way down Balfour. They pulled the fire engine in front of her, hopped out, turned the car off, and made her wait until the Brentwood PD got there, and she couldn't even stand.
That's very impressive.
Bravo. Thank you.
Bravo.
And that was his defense, that we know that because of resources, it's never been an issue of expenses within this department. The expenses are cut to the bone. It's a matter of revenue generation. And they are underpaid and overworked, and we appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions?
One quick question. Chris may be able to help on this.
Chris will have his chance. So if it's Chris's turn,
Chris
will get a chance here. We'll make a special dispensation for him. If you have a question for the ECC FPD, you want to wait till Chris gets up there? Up to you, Don. You want to ask a question?
I'm interested in the response time. And Chris sent me a copy of the report on one of those accidents, and I didn't see a response time on the report. And I'm surprised that there's not a time of the alarm or whatever the heck you guys call it.
I have most of
that.
Okay.
All of our vehicles are tracked on a CAD. Basically, everywhere we go, how high we go, how slow we go, how fast we go, it is all tracked. So that tends to be how, when somebody says it took you guys 20 minutes to get there, or that we were going 100 miles an hour, which is my personal favorite. we pull out the CAD report and say, and it's a bunch of numbers, and you usually have to have somebody explain it to you, because there's the time the call came down to the 911 center, the sheriff's department, the time that it gets transferred to our dispatch center, from that to the time it gets prioritized on what kind of call it is, and then it gets dispatched to the engine companies. Depending on the time of the day, our employees get out within under a minute during the day and under 2 minutes at night. I mean, try and put your clothing on in under 2 minutes and get in your car at 3 a.m. So that's pretty much how we defend the quality and our timeliness on calls. So sometimes it takes somebody with a degree from MIT to explain.
And I wasn't knocking the response. When I was saying that wasn't on the report at all.
Oh, okay.
And I was surprised, because I would think that would be one of the factors that would be noted.
Okay.
Jeff, just a clarifying comment. The CAD is computer-aided dispatch, so that folks know what that, I mean, we know what that is. And you guys use AVL's vehicle locators, so that with GPS coordinates and everything, so that they really do know where the engines are, if they're down at Safeway or if they're at a fire, and speed and location and time of arrival. Because we get that too all the time. It took you 20 minutes to get here, and we look it up and it's 7 minutes.
Any other questions? Chief, thank you very much. You have broad shoulders. I appreciate that. The contra cost, that's a the next item four is actually a quarterly report. It's not supposed to be on this month. I think these things happen, but Karen's supposed to be on there. Would you like to come up, Karen, and speak on behalf of the supervisor?
I would love to come up and speak. First off, good news. The Contra Costa Board of Supervisors approved yesterday Keller Canyon Mitigation Fund allocations for fiscal year 2010 and 11, and the Discovery Bay CSD four-year advisory functions received $2,000 again. Effective Friday, August 6th, so this Friday, the Contra Costa East County Building Inspection Office will be closed on Fridays due to budget issues and downturn in permits and use of the office. Good news, bouncing back and forth, seems to be like that. On the June 23rd, the Willow Lake sidewalk gap closure project received funding from the Metropolitan Transportation Commission in the amount of $50,000. So that will finish the Willow Lake sidewalk project that we've been working on. Their tentative schedule is currently they're working on coordination of utilities, and then they hope to do readjustment of utilities mid-September, I see September 16th, but no definitive dates, don't go off of that. And then they're gonna begin construction when there's a school break, and hopefully end before the, right when the break is about to end as well. So yay, Willow Lake is getting more attention. We talked about the fire district, or you did, with Battalion Chief Burris. The supervisor also had a meeting this week with a resident from Discovery Bay, President Graves, and Director Finetti to talk about the issues, and the individual is going to work with Kevin on, President Graves, on next steps.
Please.
And that remains an issue and a priority for the supervisor. And then Supervisor Pifo also attended the Discovery Bay Property Owners Association meeting hosted by Bobby Nugent, I believe 2 weeks ago. And the new board of directors, and was pleased to see how many of the Discovery Bay residents were there to turn out. And that is it for my report. But I do have, like I said, I would bring your last meeting, a copy of the Public Works fee schedule for development. I'll give the board some and then put some on the back table. And that's it.
Is that the end of your report, Karen?
That's it.
Okay, does the board have any questions for Karen or for the supervisor? Who cares? How about from the public? Any questions for the board supervisor's office?
Well, can you tell us who the citizen was that met with Chris and Mary on the fire district?
I can tell you that was Fire Chief Peterson, one of our past fire chiefs here in Discovery Bay.
Okay.
And I'll talk about that a little bit on director's comments.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. We always like to make bring special attention to special individuals in the room that aren't on the agenda. So, Chris Finetti, would you like to get up and give your You're supposed to be on the agenda. Representing the ECCCFPD.
Good, that was very, very well done. Good evening, directors and president, and guests here. I don't have a whole lot to say about the last meeting. We didn't do a whole lot. I do have something to say about the accident, though. You know, I there were some numbers that weren't stated, and I think I have some of that stuff. Here it is. Basically, the Brentwood station, because of that fire that was occurring on Eden Plains and Sunset, that's the Bixler station, was out there fighting that fire. The Brentwood station responded, and they arrived at around 13 minutes after the initial call, and the Disco Bay Bixler station showed up about within that minute. They had to stop on, they had stopped on the way, because they were in the grassland unit, they had to stop and get their extrication equipment. Is that right? They had to pick that stuff up at the station there in Bixler. But with that being said, I'm surprised how fast they showed up, considering they had to stop there and pick up that equipment. There were two DOA that were pronounced DOA there at the scene. So I think what I personally got out of that accident was just it reminds us that, well, first of all, you know, I'm not sure if all of you know where that accident occurred. It was after the S-turn, almost at County Line, so past the Byron Inn there. I mean, pretty much past it. So it's probably, what, 4.5, 5 minutes from the old station, from the Byron station. Six minutes. Well, not the way I drive. So it does remind us that, you know, and it was no surprise that we have increased our response time. So, you know, every call is different. Every you know, because we don't know where all these, you know, the station is not where the station is, I've been told. It's where the firemen are. It's where the, you know, the fire personnel are. It's where the engine is. If they're out fire, if they're nearby, but they're closer sometimes, then they get lucky and they're there faster. If they're not nearby, they're a little later and they're not so lucky. So, and that was the issue. That was the same issue before they closed station. So, you know, that was sort of luck of the draw. And in this case, I think we were unlucky. I think, and you know, it'd be nice if we had a quick response vehicle that was close. You know, it would be nice. You know, I think that if, you know, a month ago, that, you know, the fire personnel would have showed up faster. If after 13 minutes, I talked to the chief and like the battalion chief Burris said, it was a pretty heinous accident. So these two that were DOA were clearly not going to make it. So, you know, but if you skew your mind a little bit, you can imagine, you know, it could have just happened just as easily where someone was ejected from the car, there was an accident, and someone's, you know, fighting for their life for an extra 10 minutes. So, and that's sort of been my mantra all along, is that I think having safety personnel near, you know, first is, you know, and of course that third person on that engine is, I think that we're, you know, I think I've always been advocating for that. That's why we need more money in the district. So I just sort of wanted to talk a little bit about that. And I got you your numbers. I can break that down a little bit, but it's pretty, you know, it's 13 minutes on scene, you know, and as it was an unfortunate accident, I just think that, you know, it makes you think a little bit. Is that sort of, that's enough information on the accident?
I have a question about that.
Okay.
You want to wait till the, are you done?
Well, a couple other points about the meeting that we had on Monday. You know, we didn't talk at all about the closures. I don't think the rest of the board really wants to talk about that too much. We approved employment for the interim chief. Now he is our fire chief, Hugh Henderson. I think you remember the Bradford Island fire. They have been asking to be annexed into the district, and they came and made an argument about, you know, they sort of were appealing to us to consider us having them get annexed into the district. And so we heard them. We didn't really have any discussions based on it, but I thought you should know that. Tom. And really the other point of mention would be is that we adopted a budget and fiscal policies for the year. And I didn't get a chance because I got in here late to make copies of that. But if you guys, if anybody's interested, just raise your hand and I'll make some copies back there. It basically goes, there's some, you know, and I just giving you a couple little points on that. There's going to be an opinion poll that's happening. Basically, it's in process right now. And it's about the special tax. We're trying to figure out, you know, test the waters, finding out if people are, you know, are interested in paying the extra, you know, some extra money and maybe what that amount would be. I don't have any details on that. I think by next meeting, I'm going to have some more details on that. And also cost recovery or user fees. That's another item that we're looking at in the next couple months about, you know, people who maybe live out of county, if they're receiving services, they would actually, they or their insurance company might be paid. I think there's some other districts. David, I think you confirmed that there's some other districts that do that.
Yeah, I don't agree with that whatsoever.
You don't agree with them?
No. It's actually not done very often at all.
Okay. Well, it's, I think they're just,
They're just looking at it.
In fact, these three lines is the most they've discussed, probably. And then there's a big list of items, and of course, next year is the revenue enhancement, the special tax, and that's looking at, it's going to happen in June. It feels like it's a long time away, but with these polls that are happening and these studies that are happening, you know, it may be something that we need to do to make sure that we get a solid hit out of this and not rush anything. I hope that the board's making a good decision there, as opposed to maybe having a special tax that is like a mail tax, you know, through the mail, which you know, we're discussing that also. And that's pretty much it. I think that the board should know also, because I know that there's some discussion going on about the fire district, and this may go right to your point, to your director's comment that part of what's going to happen this year in March and May, I'll just read it right from here, transfer of property. A majority of the fire station properties hold title by Contra Costa County. It would be advantageous to transfer title to the district. And so that might concern you if considering what your plans might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, and that's pretty much it.
So I just wanted, for clarification purposes,
yeah.
The board is now going to go to the people that received the advantage of closing the two stations out here and ask them if they want to pay more taxes to open the stations back up out here. Is that what they're asking?
Isn't that about it?
Okay. David.
Yeah, Chris, I have six now. Comments, questions. The first one, the 13 minutes on scene. I do not believe, although I don't have it in front of me, that meets the LAFCO threshold or the department's targeted goal of response time. Do you know, or does Jeff know? 13 minutes is a long time for a trauma type of an accident.
I believe it was either
15
or
16. Well, Hugh told me that 15 minutes for the ambulance.
I'm talking about first responders on scene.
I got it right here. The sign, 16:27:13. What does the sign mean? That means the call hat came in, right? En route, 16:28:01. That's 45 seconds later. Arrived, 16:40:15. That's 12 minutes and 15 seconds later. So that's a total of 13 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds to me, as somebody that does this for a living, like a really long time to get to a multi or, you know, casualty type accident. I'm not worried about DOAs. I'm worried about the survivors, that they don't become DOAs. And I think that point's probably made by everybody,
this accident was pretty clear. I mean, I guess, you know, there was pretty certainty that there's not going to be a survivor. The people that were yeah. bad off, they were not going to make it.
Yeah.
But that's why I mentioned that when you think about the accidents where you're wondering what happened the last 8 minutes when no one was there.
Correct.
You know, who was fighting for their life?
And as a professional in the business, we never take reports like that seriously, because somebody may be on scene that doesn't know what they're doing. The person's unconscious, but they're alive, and they're trying to pronounce them DOA. So until we get there and make that determination, it really isn't a fact until we're on scene. Anyway, so I've got a concern about that. And I'm sorry, you guys said you didn't do too much at the last meeting. I keep bringing this up. The board resolution was to create a transition to an independent special district and go after revenue enhancement. And I just, I just, as a community member and a board member on this board, I just don't see any priority being put towards that.
Well, let me tell you, on this list of items that that the administration put together, and a lot of stuff is on here, second to last item is governance model.
Right.
November discussion, June, it's going to be on the ballot in June.
Yeah, see, I would like to see the transition, and of course, I'm not a board member, but that should be the number one thing on your agenda. In fact, we've got a letter from our attorney. While you guys are enjoying special privileges afforded under the fire codes for the transition team that's in place now, a independent special district needs to be created, which will change somewhat of the structure of the board. And I hope the community pays attention to that, because that is what needs to happen. Bradford Island, understand that gentleman or those people making a pitch, I would believe that would go before LAFCO for an expansion of the fire district. And in the situation that the district's in right now, I don't think that would be something that would be advantageous to farm out our resources even farther as far as Bradford Island. I think that's kind of interesting. Next one, poll. Do you guys have a cost on that poll? What it's costing you guys to do that?
I don't have it with me. There were some discussions, but it was really spitballing, and I think it was 40 or 50,000. All right, if I'm not mistaken. And I, you know what? Let me write that down. I'll have that to you.
Yeah, please do, because
that sounds like a station for a year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we.
I may have two polls. That may be two to put together that I added up, but I want you to have accurate information.
Again, not to rehash it, but I think we know that we probably saved about $70,000 by closing two stations, and then spending that on a poll when the real poll comes at the election, again, seems like really bad, again, another bad decision by that board. The next one is the user fee. That really isn't done too often. It is done in some places, and I realize that the district is looking for revenue, and that's what they need to do. But that also brings up collection issues, because the department isn't in the business of doing collection on especially delinquent accounts.
Right.
It's why a lot of departments don't run ambulance companies, because they end up chasing those bills down. So it didn't seem like that was popular anyway with your board, but certainly good that you're looking at everything. And the last one is transfer of title, and it sounds like it caught President Graves. You know, I will myself fight that, because right now the county has title of those stations, and what we see, the decisions going on with the district don't seem to be popular with the communities that you guys serve, and I just don't see us giving away the houses. I'm just very, very unimpressed at the direction that the district has taken with almost all of their decision making. Again, it's their right. They were granted. You're one of our commissioners, and we appreciate you being there and standing up for our community. But we're a little hamstrung, a little held hostage here. And the last thing I would like to see is the county relinquish buildings that we've all paid for to put it in the hands of folks that are making unpopular decisions. Thank you.
Anybody else? Any comments for the public?
I have a comment. I would like to get a copy of the budget, please, if I could.
Okay. Actually, you want your email address? I can send it to you.
J. Silver, like the metal.
Okay.
At ALSCO, ALSCO .com.
Thank you.
I guess the comment I would make is there's a LAFCO meeting coming up next week, right?
Yeah.
What's the deal on that? What's
you mean as it actually
as it relates to the fire district?
I'm sorry?
As it relates to the fire district? Don't they have an agenda item?
I've heard that. I'm not sure actually if you know, I don't know anything.
Has the agenda been published for that meeting yet?
Sure.
I don't believe it's been published for that meeting yet. It does come through this, it does get brought to this, I mean, it does come here as a courtesy. If somebody wants a copy of that, they can call down here, I guess, and we can forward one to them. I don't know who it goes out to. I just know that it does come to the town, but I don't believe the agenda's been put out for that meeting yet.
It might not be a bad idea if the district gets it to send it to at least the people that they have on their agenda list, since it has a topic on it that people can go turn about.
Yeah, you know what? I think actually the best way to handle that is for whoever's interested in that getting that agenda, contact Luann Texera at LAFCO.
And it'll be posted on the website.
And it's posted on the website. So. that information, rather than task our staff with passing on other agendas, I would rather have, since there's a direct way to handle that, I would rather see it handled through LAFCO.
And as far as how we work with LAFCO, you know, they have certain powers, and it's, I'm glad that they're looking at these issues.
Any other questions for the director? Are you pointing, or are you, oh, thanks. Yes, Jeff.
What was on that particular accident, what was the time the first paramedic arrived?
Do you know if they arrived with the first team?
I can't get some.
I don't know that. You know, I can email you that information if you want. I'm surprised it wasn't here when I asked for it. Although this was kind of emailed to all the directors.
And as a, to help clarify, I read something that confused me. The paramedic, the ambulance, the AMR activity in this fire district is completely separate from the fire district. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, as far as the way they're funded.
The way they're funded. So that's funded through the county?
That's my understanding.
And does that come out of the general fund? Or is that part of this?
AMR is a for-profit corporation that receives funding through Contra Costa County through Measure H funds for the 911 contract. But it is a for-profit company, and that is why you will see them use strike cars, flex cars, and not have dedicated ambulances in your community. That's why you get one station ambulance in downtown Brentwood. And the reason you have actually three QRPs in this district is because of the remote setting. So you would have one medic in a quick response vehicle.
So is that Measure H cap, fund? Is that a fund that's driven by a specific, was there a specific initiative, or is that, where does that money come from? How is that money? Is there a discredit? My question is, I guess, because as everything else was diminished with respect to service and response time, is there a way for that part, since most of the calls out there are medical, to be increased? I've read, and the reason I'm asking right now is I've read two separate conflicting statements.
I didn't know that, but they're not they haven't been decreased.
No, that's not what I said.
Yeah.
I said that overall response time by the fire department had been decreased for this area. So because most of the calls are medical calls, is there a way to increase AMR response?
That's,
I know there's contracts.
Okay.
I'm wondering if that is something from your position on this board that could be looked at or potentially.
Actually, because as you said, Jeff, in your initial statement, they're two separate issues. That would be an issue to bring up with the Board of Supervisors, because they're the ones that have the Proposition H funds run through them, and they're the ones that have directed how those funds are to be used and how they were distributed. It is completely separate from the fire district. It's just that they house themselves within the fire district facilities, because those are owned by the county.
So they got moved to an operational.
And they got moved to an operational. Right. So appreciate the question, but I think it's directed to the wrong person. Any other questions?
I just wanted to say one more thing about, because in response to what the time Chief Burris had said about this accident, and I wanted to make sure that you guys understood that, originally I fought for the stations to not be closed, and I had very little voice in a board that's heavily populated by city officials. And I thought about writing, talking about this accident at the last meeting on Monday, but I decided that I'll keep fighting, but I'm not sure how much traction I'm gonna get when it comes to like trying to reopen the station, especially if I have to go in front of the board and ask, I don't think that's gonna work very well. But I think that the mindset that I'm starting to take is that we need to start informing, because this new measure is gonna happen next year. I think we're just gonna have to start talking to people, and I'll be the first in line I'm going to write a letter to the Brentwood press, you know, about the accident. And I think the major thing that came out of the accident for me is that Brentwood lost their engine for 2 hours, and that means that they were, you know, they didn't have an engine. They had to have a backup department sort of support them. So for people out there who are having maybe a little extra coverage and they're getting 3-0 on an engine, you know, they may feel pretty secure, but they have to be reminded that, you know, they're at risk too because of this kind of stuff. If there's an accident even farther on Vasco, they may lose the engine even longer. And so I think I could do probably a lot more good and just in trying to inform the public over there. And, you know, I hope that enough of this population out here is going to vote for a tax measure to get some of these stations back. But, you know, I think that's sort of in my mind. I think I need to start informing, you know, the larger population, the ones where we're going to get the votes that make this thing pass. And, you know, I'm not sure if making, you know, pounding my chest there at the meetings, you know, for, you know, just to do it is going to actually get the kind of traction I want. I'm going to start going out to the community and talking to them and letting them know that this is a problem for everyone. You know, I think we need 3-0 on every engine. I never felt any differently than that. And I think the only way we're going to get there, even when we didn't have station closing, was to get a tax increase, so, or, you know, a revenue enhancement. So,
okay. Appreciate your report. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
I'd now like to open a public hearing. Two items on the public hearing. Staff?
District financial.
I skipped. District financial report. We actually we're expecting information from the county. The county does operate as our treasurer and as our to provide us with our financial reports. The unfortunate reports did not come in a timely fashion. We don't have those, so we're going to skip item D. I'm going to move to item E. I don't know what I was thinking here. Sorry, guys. Consent calendar. Item 4 will be removed from the consent calendar and not addressed. So the consent calendar now consists of items 1. Oh, I wrote that wrong place. That's why. 1, 2, 3, and 5.
Mr. President?
Yes.
I make a motion that we approve the consent calendar, items 1 through 3, and item 5.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. Is there any comment with regards to any of those items? Yes.
On 3, where it says appointing general manager to be the board secretary, does that mean that Janet is the recording secretary and he's the secretary? Does he have a list of duties that we could understand? We've never had. What I'm saying is, I don't understand what you're going to be doing. Tell me what you're going to be doing.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but general manager by bylaws
right.
Is the secretary of the district. Virgil was the secretary of the district. He's now the general manager. He'll be the secretary.
Oh.
Same old stuff, different name.
Okay.
It allows him to make coffee.
Yeah.
Okay. Water up. I can understand that. I just thought, I'll give him another job and he's brand new on this one. So.
Right. For the coffee I make pretty strong.
All right,
yeah. Got it.
So, Mr. Flint.
Oh, I'd like to have number 5 taken off. For discussion.
Don't believe.
I can pull for discussion.
Okay.
If that's okay with Director Pifo.
Yep. Come on up.
Hold on a second. What?
I couldn't hear.
He wants to pull number 5 for discussion. So, then I need let's first take care of the items that have been there.
Actually, President Graves, you could have him come up and make his comments, and then we can either approve or disapprove.
Okay.
He just wants to pull for discussion.
Legal? Just have him come up to discuss, or
yeah, he has a right to comment.
Sure.
Or approve. He can come up and make his comments, and
okay.
The board can do.
Come on up, Don.
Okay, thanks.
This is working.
I had some conversation back and forth with Rick and General Manager Howard, rather, and it seems to me that number 5 is. Change in a process that's in place that allows for a lot of public notice of an increase in rates. And it also allows for publication, so the public knows about it that way. But even more important for me is that it allows for 2 meetings where it's brought up as part of a public hearing. And it allows for the public to have time to know what's going on. And I think it served us well, and I think that if there's a need to save $500 a year in publication fees, I wonder if there's not a way that you could craft this so that the same notice to the public as far as meetings and agendas and having two opportunities for the public hearing can take place without taking on the expenses of the publication and maybe even the attorney fees. Does that make sense?
I believe it's a valid question. I would actually turn this over to legal counsel for a response at this point.
The notice requirements, excuse me, for these fees are set forth by Prop 218. They're not set forth by the requirements for ordinances. Whether there's ordinance or not, everybody's going to get mailed notice. And then in addition, because they're collected on tax roll, there's going to be published notice. The resolutions do not need to be published after the fact. That is the main difference. And the practice in this district has been to do it by ordinance, but it's sort of like the house that Jack built, because there are many in this section of the ordinance, there are many in that section of the ordinance, and it takes you an hour to sit down and put it all together. By doing it by resolution, they can put the whole ball of wax in one document, so that's for the benefit of the public. As far as the two readings, the Prop 218 fees are adopted in public hearing, and under the rules for ordinances, if it's the ordinance is adopted in public hearing, you do not need the two readings. The reason that they have the two readings on this one ordinance is because it's not a public hearing item. The district does not need this ordinance to adopt by resolution. The law was changed in 2005 to authorize the district to adopt fees by resolution. This is merely a housekeeping item so that when people follow through the ordinances on the old fees, when they go back to, you know, they have to track about four or five ordinances and they want to know what happened, and there wasn't an ordinance for this year, there will be a memorialization of the fact that the district's going to use its option to adopt fees by resolution. There is no change to notice of public.
That seems like a good answer. A little bit confusing, but
he gets paid by the word.
Well, I know it's complicated stuff, and I'm not expecting to understand it all. But if you understand, my question is really geared around right now. Well, is there going to be a difference after this, if this passes, as it stands, in any item coming before the board and to the public, and the amount of times it's brought forward?
And to answer your original,
and a yes or no would be awesome.
Well, let me answer your first question. And the simple answer to your first question is that there's no change in the notice. Now, with that, as far as difference in time being brought to the public, I think that goes back to the answer to the first question, because that has to do with notice.
So in some cases, there'll be less time for the public, in some cases, it'll be the same.
It depends on the situation. As far as fees, there's no difference. As far as ordinances, the main difference is that there will be no after-the-fact publication.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that. Brian, did you have something you want to say?
No, he covered it.
Okay. Any other concerns? Okay, the vote before the board that has been moved and seconded is to vote on the consent agenda, items 1, 2, 3, and 5. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. At this time, I'd like to call a public hearing. Groundhog Day.
There you go.
Item number one, and now you don't have to look at me like you're surprised, right?
Okay, let's see. There you go. This is a public hearing to establish charges for water and wastewater services and collection of those charges on the county tax roll for the 2010-11 fiscal year. On July 21st, this board received testimony from the public regarding the establishment of the new fees and charges for water and wastewater and continuing collection of those fees. This proposed increase for this fiscal year is 9% for all utility customers. Notices were mailed to all property owners in Discovery Bay pursuant to Prop 218 in the first part of June this year. And just to let you know, we have received one more protest letters since the last meeting, bringing our total to 11. That's all I have.
Thank you. Just for clarification purposes, this was an official opening of a public hearing. I didn't know if I made myself clear on that. Moving on to item two.
Question. We need to have a vote.
Do we need to vote on these items individually?
Well, this is continued public hearing. You can take additional testimony. The testimony carried from the last meeting carries forward.
Okay, so we're going to address.
If anybody has any additional testimony
understood.
On anything new. Then
first of all, does anybody on the board have any additional information or questions or clarifications they'd like to make that weren't made last week?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, for our general manager, we received a total of 11 protests.
Correct.
And what is the threshold? I believe there's a threshold if X amount of people protest. Do we know?
I don't know that number.
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's even close.
No, it's not close.
Maybe legal knows.
It's got to be 3,800 people or something like that.
Yeah, we should have those numbers available in case anyone asks in the future. Thank you.
Any additional comments or concerns from the public that weren't expressed at the last meeting? Okay, not hearing any. I will close the public hearing on that item. That's it, we're done with that one?
I would make a motion that we adopt the resolution 2010-07 for wastewater and wastewater services and collection of the charges on the county tax rolls for the 2010-2011 fiscal year.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. Any other further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. I will now open a public hearing on item two on the agenda, which is the approve and adopt resolution 2010-08. And I will ask Farron to please come up and speak to that.
And 2010-09.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, and Farron Perez will present the
thank
report.
Thank you, staff.
Okay. This is a follow-up. This is for the Ravenswood development, Zone 9. This is a follow-up from Resolution 2010-5 on June 2nd, which you guys approved, which directed Herwood Engineering to go ahead and process an engineering report, or final engineer's assessment report, I'm sorry, for that district. The report was received. The two resolutions, the first one, 2010-08, is an intent to levy and collect, which kind of notices about this hearing tonight, and the 2010-9 resolution, which would confirm and order the levy. Key points on the assessment is that it is an increase of $7.86 from last year. However, I do want to say that it originally would have been a significantly higher increase. It should have been $472.68, but because of the overfunded reserve, it reduced that by $61.82 per household. So it only increased by $7.86, and this is because of all of the improvements we were doing in that area.
Thank you. Is that all you have to report?
Yep.
Okay. Does the public have any comments with regards to this resolution? Does the board have any comments or questions? I believe it's a fairly standard housekeeping item. I will now close the public hearing and entertain a motion to vote.
I would make a motion through the chair to approve and adopt resolution 2010-08 and resolution 2010-09.
Is there a second?
Y'all second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. On to new business and action items. We have two items on that staff has put on the agenda, and I would ask the general manager to please explain these items to us.
Thank you. The first item is a land use permit application for modifications that will propose to take place at the Orwood Resort RV Park in Marina. They've submitted an application to Contra Costa County seeking approval for site modifications that would include expansion to the existing restaurant, replacement replacement of their fuel dock and conversion of the tent campground to an RV campground. At this point in time, the county is seeking input and just comments from the board, and the applicant is in the audience tonight and is prepared to address the board if you have any questions at home.
Actually, I do. So if Mr.
Caprio
would please come forward, I would appreciate that. My first question is, what is in the location of these proposed RV sites currently?
It's a tent campground.
Okay.
Well, it's both. It's RVs and tents.
Okay. How many current RV sites are they, and are there hookups provided for them?
Sewer hookups? Currently, no. There's no current sewer hookups.
Okay.
There's electric and water.
And first of all, we're not bad guys. We don't mean to make you nervous or anything. I just have a couple of questions. Okay.
No,
I'm here to attack you.
No.
How many RV sites are you proposing?
It's around 100 right now.
Will there be hookups for that?
Yeah, sewer and water and electric.
Okay. How do you handle your wastewater out there?
Currently, it's treated and evaporated.
Through your own?
We have our own sewer plant.
Oh, you do?
We have a batch plant, yeah.
Okay.
We evaporate all. We don't discharge in Delta.
Okay. It being part of what our purview, that was a concern of mine. Like, if you're going to add a bunch of more wastewater, I want to make sure it's not going into a septic or something that's going to leach into the okay.
We prefer to send it over here and not deal with it, but
yeah. If you can get it to the school.
I can get it to the school.
Is there a line? Do you have a line system?
Well, you can go ahead. Yeah. Those were a couple of my questions that I have currently, but more questions from the board are welcome. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, just a quick question. You said you have basically an evaporation pond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it lined?
It's a clay pond.
Clay pond.
Yeah. So it's.
And just for my own curiosity, that's permitted through
State of California.
State. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions from the?
I think for me, Orwood is probably one of the better run. Cleaner resort areas in this town. I've been there over the last years and years and years, and I think everything they've done First Cabin, the docks, the surroundings. I mean, there's been nothing done shoddy in that place at all, and I have the fullest confidence that they'll do this.
The removal of they have a trailer park.
There's a mobile home park.
That's also going to go.
I will concur with the board in that. And in the 16 years that I've been out here, I've watched you guys do nothing but improve Orwood almost yearly, and we do appreciate that, being that we're neighbors.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that, but you know, we have to do it. Any other questions? Can I just, Virgil, would you have any comments with regards to that process, just out of curiosity?
No.
Good to go. Okay, I got to ask the authority.
No comments.
Yeah, I would, any comments from the public on this? Okay,
question.
Yes, sir.
What is the occupancy? So 100 spaces, and then how much time is that guest there for? Is it, I'm concerned about people staying for months at a time.
The county hasn't written their, they're going to have land use permit.
Okay.
Well, it's a land use permit, but they're going to have conditions of approval, and they're going to stick it all in there. We don't want anybody living there.
All right.
That's the reason we don't have a mobile home park.
Appreciate that.
We don't want to be landlords anymore.
We've got a lot of weekenders, campers, and for 2 days, 3 days.
And I believe our role in this is just through our MAC duties, just to make any comments. If you feel, do we need to move any comments along on this, or what does the board feel? Or just,
I support it.
Yeah, I think we're
okay.
Then
I would direct staff to put together a letter of support saying that we feel that they're good neighbors and that they, you know.
Support the project.
Please put that letter together and bring it back to the board for approval.
I can do that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your attendance. I appreciate it.
Actually, if that's non-controversial.
If it's not, okay, send it out.
Yeah.
I just want to be sure. We've had some issues on this before.
Oh,
okay.
Controversial.
Please do that and send it out, Rick. I'd appreciate it. Next item.
The next item is a land use permit application for Delta RV and Storage. Delta RV and Boat Storage. It's on the south side of Highway 4, just north. north or just west of Big Sur, I should say. The applicant is seeking a land use permit from Contra Costa County. And this is a little bit more complicated. To legalize the properties used subsequent to the boat storage overlay ordinance that went into effect back in 2009. The ordinance created a new overlay area for those zoned in the agricultural areas to allow the establishment of boat and limited recreational vehicle storage areas beyond what was prior to the one mile limit. And it limited existing facilities to be in place. So this allows, this change would allow Delta RV and boat storage to fall within the new regulations in the new overlays. So that's all I have to report, and the applicant is in the audience if there are any questions.
This is pretty much a housekeeping issue that was mandated through
pretty ministerial.
Yeah, through the county. We really, again, are only looking at this from an advisory standpoint, and really they're just going to be brought into compliance. I'm sure that's going to cost them money to be put into compliance like everything else does. But does the board have any comment on this? Okay.
Yeah.
David?
Just want to thank the Pelicans. I see them in the audience there, and they do come from time to time. And thank you for cleaning up that area down there. It really looks nice. And I hear comments all the time that people appreciate all the work that you're doing. So thank you.
Yeah. And we do have a comment. Please come to the podium.
I have a couple comments. I followed this boat ordinance overlay, and throughout the process, it was done through a negative declaration. There was no real looking at mitigation for any of what is happening out there. This property particularly is abutting Kellogg Creek, and Kellogg Creek drains into Discovery Bay. Kellogg Creek in that area, according to the Habitat Conservation Plan, is an additional key restoration priority area. So my concern is the impact of on Kellogg Creek. It's my understanding also that Caltrans is doing improvements on that intersection. They will be taking land from the Pellegrini's property to do that. If you look at the site plan, it doesn't address any of that. As a matter of fact, on most of the maps, it doesn't even note that Kellogg Creek is there. I think that's a concern. I think that there are some environmental issues by having RV storage. There's obvious leakage from oil and engines, and I think it's more than what you would have with a car storage because you have larger fuel tanks on top of that. If you look at the agency comment request form, you'll see that it was never sent to the HCP, which is it should be. It also wasn't sent to Fish and Game or Rec 800 or, you know, any of the agencies that I think should have input in it when you're dealing with a tributary. They're also in the application doesn't tell you which is required as to what percentage is going to be RV versus boats. It doesn't give you the ingress and egress. As you know, Fixler Road needs improvement. There's not a lot of room, and there's some issues turning into that property at this point in time, which will be exasperated. I think that it's important that this gets looked at a little closer. It's not necessarily a housekeeping issue. It's taking an illegal storage unit and trying to make it legal and bring it into compliance to what it should be. The other issue that I have is the standards through the boat ordinance is an 8-foot high fencing. I feel personally that that's too low because the property sits lower than the roadway, so it will be ineffective as far as screening the property. Let me see, what else do I have? I think that's pretty much it. I think it's more than housekeeping. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. I think it's significant on Kellogg Creek. Kellogg Creek's important to Discovery Bay. It does drain into our bay here. It's not something I think there needs to be more information. It's been confirmed that the application itself is incomplete. I'm also kind of confused as to the name of the business. On one document it says it's Delta Storage, and on another document it says it's Discovery Bay Storage. Do we know what the name of the business is?
It's Delta.
Okay, well, we can address these issues. You're running up against your 3-minute limit. But,
okay, well, just so you know, I did do a search for Delta Storage, Delta Boat Storage, and Discovery Bay Boat Storage. None of those had a business license. So I would suggest that, you know, before it goes too much further, that that would be confirmed.
Thank you for your comments. Again, I would appreciate you bringing those forward and explain it, just so you're aware of our abilities here. We are an advisory to the county on these issues. It's outside of our jurisdiction, but we do want to make sure that we are making the correct recommendations. I think at this point I would invite Scott Pelton, who's representing the facility, to come forward and address any of these issues that he can at this point.
Evening.
Hey, Scott.
Most of the things that she actually brought up have been addressed by the county. You don't show it here. The ingress, egress, whatever you call it, has been addressed. We're going to be entering from further down the road rather than where the entrance is now. The county has addressed this new easement that I never knew anything about until this land use permit was put into place. The easement's widening to 60 feet from 40 feet, I think, right now, which it's going to come into our property another 12 feet, as I understand right now. The road's going to get widened from
That's on Bixler?
That's on Bixler,
okay.
All the way down. And unfortunately, we're going to pay for it. So that's just part of this process. They really haven't addressed the Kellogg Creek, but we stay as far from Kellogg Creek as we could possibly get. And in reality, at some point in time, that whole storage will move back to the backside of that property. Right now, we're trying to get a use permit in place to make things legal. And then at that point, we'll continue to improve the site. I'd like nothing more than to have a 10-foot wall there rather than an 8-foot wall. That's something the county is going to have to address. An 8-foot wall, actually, you know, we're not below the roadway so much, so an 8-foot wall would probably work. But I'd rather have a 10-foot wall from a security standpoint. It's more difficult to get over. Until we get that place covered and closed in like that, which is what we prefer to do, it's hard to get the security for the property that's there. And so, you know, our storage is limited to things that people don't think are gonna get messed with. So the RV kind of storage is limited. You know, we have indoor storage there. The large building's completely full. We have people that would like more, but unfortunately, I think the security issue isn't gonna get addressed until we get a use permit put in place. At that point, then we'll spend the money to make that a first-class site. And so I believe the county is definitely addressing most of the issues. Again, the Kellogg Creek deal is a little vague for me, but we'll address anything that has to do with Kellogg Creek.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Scott? Yep.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. And I've sat through several of the meetings that I believe some of us in the audience did as well with East County Planning, and I believe most, I can't vouch for all of them, I wasn't taking specific notes, but most of those issues were brought up and addressed just from my fellow board members, not only by East County Planning, but the staff that they had even talked about as you create this facility or build it out, collection standards for rain runoff and all of those things. So I kind of think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves in the process, but it is a long, arduous process that there's plenty of opportunity to address every one of these issues and make sure.
As the county puts requirements on us, we're going to address the requirements and deal with them in whatever manner they are. Well, we're just as concerned as the county is and as the community is to making that place a sightly piece of property that fits into the community. And we're until we can get a use permit put into place, now I've told this board a number of times, we're not going to spend the money that really needs to be spent over there. Now that the process is in place and we're going after the use permit, once we acquire the permit, and of course it's going to cost a fortune just to get to this section, we'll continue to move that process forward and make it a nice place.
Okay. Thank you for your input. I appreciate that, Scott. Any comment from the public? Any further comment from the public? Okay. Recommendations from the board?
Same as the last time.
I personally support the project, and I would like to see if we could direct staff to write a letter of support.
Is there any disagreement with that?
Nope.
Okay. You have your direction there. Rick, appreciate that. Thank you for your time. Thank you, everybody, for their input. Appreciate it. Committee liaison reports. Transplan, have they met? Anything transplant? That kind of planning commission report is the same one we talked about earlier. It's just under a different title, isn't it? Code enforcement reports?
Yeah, there was a code enforcement meeting on Thursday. Unfortunately, it was canceled due to illness of the code enforcement officer. We will be re-meeting, and the two issues that were kind of the hot button, I believe somebody in the audience brought one of them up, was a sign at the entrance of Discovery Bay Boulevard and Clipper about weed removal. That has been removed, and also the Straw Hat Pizza sign that took up the entire window at their facility has also been removed.
Any comments in regards to code enforcement? I have a general comment. I was actually going over to meet with Virgil to look at some things we're doing across town to improve the town, and just from my place by the marina to Discovery Point, I counted 11 violations of either vehicles illegally parked, trailers illegally parked, illegal vehicles, whatever, just in glancing.
Street
and I don't know, on private property. So I don't know if that falls under the county's ordinance.
If they're parked in the driveway, it depends on what the violation would be.
Trailers parked in the driveway?
Yeah, if that is, and that's on Marina?
No, that's on River Lake. There were six of them on River Lake. My understanding is that within the county, you have to be behind the edge of the building.
90%.
Six on River Lake, three on Discovery Bay Boulevard, and two on Discovery Point. I didn't know if this was because the DBPOA is having issues, you might say, and so therefore everybody's taking advantage of it and parking their trailers in their houses, or whether this was a county thing. And I mentioned it to Virgil, and Virgil said it could be a combination of both. So I would like to see code enforcement look at that, considering the issues that we're having here, and seeing if we can't, because it's going to get horrible if there's trailers parked all over the place.
President Graves, if I may address that is an ongoing, it stays as an open case within Discovery Bay, and the officer, when they're out here, usually picks random streets, does a drive around, and puts what's called a notice to comply, an NTC, on those. But when there is a street that's reported specifically, as you just did, I would be happy to forward those for extra targeted attention.
Didn't know, just making an observation. Did you have something, Pat?
Well, there's been a boat parked as you pull into Seal Drive, and if there's a car on either side, and then that big boat with the trailer is there, and there's a car coming, you can't even get into the street. And the other day, I noticed there was a black and white out there, and they were up investigating the boat, but it sat there for another 3 days. Is that illegal? I mean, it's... Not,
is it gone?
Yes.
It periodically just keeps appearing there.
There is a street ordinance of how long they can leave those vehicles on the street, and if they're on the street, it's the sheriff or CHP that would take care of that.
The unfortunate part about that is that what I've found in the past, because on Marina we tend to get a lot of that, is that as long as they move it, mine's not on, so it's not me.
Only dogs can hear that.
Ouch. As long as they move it, like 20 feet, drive it and park it again, the sticker comes off. But I got to give the sheriff credit for going around. There's green stickers on about five trailers down there right now. Even though I think our local palmist does a great job in trimming palm trees, he does a horrible job at parking his trailer. Other comments? Oh, sorry. Code enforcement. Thank you for that report. There actually was a special district meeting that I was not able to make. It was at a 10 o'clock in the morning deal, and I wasn't able to get there. So I have no report on that. Now time for director's comments. Any comments, Ray?
No.
Mark? Brian?
No.
David?
Nope.
Excuse me?
Did you hear me?
No.
Wow.
We're going to get out of here.
No, I got a page of them. My turn. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I do have a few things. I did have a meeting at the supervisor's office with a past fire chief, Peterson, Greg Peterson of Discovery Bay. He was the original volunteer fire chief that put together the volunteer fire department. He had some interesting insight. He had some interesting comments. He's very concerned about the situation as it is today. I'm not sure that it's that we live in a different world than we lived in 20 years ago when they started up that department. But I am going to continue to meet with him and some other people to look at some different options that we may be able to either address, analyze, and use or not use. But because he has an interest in that, I have told him that I will continue to meet with him on that basis. Chris was also in that meeting, and I think he brought together some very, really interesting points. One of them is that for about 12 years, we were actually subsidizing Brentwood and their fire department, which is an interesting perspective considering that's what they've accused us of for the last few years. And apparently, I'm taking his word for it because he was the battalion chief. He probably knows. We're doing a very interesting project out on Discovery Point. You want to give us a little bit of that, Virgil, or do you want?
I was actually going to cover that in my comments and have him bring Virgil up to do that. So.
Okay. I just want to let you know, I've been there and seen it, and it's pretty cool, man. We're stuffing pipe in a little hole, and it's really neat to watch it happen. I watched 450 feet of pipe in 6 hours. How many hours? 2 hours today? I mean, it was all the way. It was cool. I was laying pipe today. Special meeting. We had a special meeting last Thursday that some of you attended, which where council brought together some very insightful information with regards to the Brown Act and with CSD law and discussing PRRs. Appreciate that. Appreciate those of you that attended. I think it was helpful to all of us. That's all I got. So, at this point, I don't know what you had. It's not there. General Manager's Report.
Okay.
I thought I missed something.
Thank you, Mr. President. What I'd like to do is, I have actually got four things. I'm going to go over the first two really quickly because I can dispense with those two. And then I'm going to ask Virgil Caney to come up and discuss two items that he's working on. The first thing is that we've completed our palm tree trimming for the year. We trimmed 132 palm trees in the last couple of weeks. You've seen our contractor out there, so you know which trees are ours and which ones aren't, because ours are all nice and neat and trimmed. And that project went very, very well, and Farron and her crew did a nice job on that. Another thing that I'm very pleased to, I wasn't actually going to mention it tonight, but I everything worked out very well. At our last meeting, we actually went live with a testing of a digital audio recording for our board meetings. And the interesting thing about that is that halfway through the meeting, at our workshop the other night, the actual tape that we used as a backup now broke halfway through the meeting. So we were lucky that we actually had this digital system in place. And we're still working some bugs out of it, but I'm just happy to please have said that that's finally on board, and we should be able to provide that information soon. Yes.
Before you go on, you were talking about the palm trees.
Yeah.
I know I brought up, at least at the last meeting, if not the one before that, the lighting on the palm trees is still out. There are lights out there.
I'll touch base with Farron. I asked her about that, and she went by and she thought it was on the other day, but I will verify with her.
Yeah, we should be a little more efficient about being able to get those.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'd like to ask Virgil to come on up and discuss the project that Kevin was discussing, as well as another really exciting project we got going on.
It was cool, man.
As you all know, we're in a process of replacing about 400 and some odd feet of sewer gravity line. There's two types of sewer lines. There's gravity line, and then there's a force main. A force main is where the pump is really pushing that water to some location that's under pressure, where a gravity line is just a line that just gravity is sloped for a certain percentage and it's going down. As part of our making improvements to the infrastructure, if we really had the money, we'd be probably doing a mile or so a year in improvements and replacements, but we don't have the money, so we have to be very cautious as to what we do. So we took the section of 8-inch clay pipe that we felt had some dips in it, and the reason we felt that is we put a camera down in there and the camera head went underwater at a couple of spots. And so what we did is we were going to open trench that, replace that, but we were running so many difficulties in the way of the backfill material. When we grabbed the material there, it was too wet to compact to 90% compaction. And so the cost to bring in base rock to fill that depth from 17 feet up was going to cost us another extra $32,000. So we elected to look at another method, and it's pipe bursting. And so what we did is we put in a pretty much about a 5/8 thick HDPE pipe. It is a dark plastic pipe, and it's just one piece. What you've done is you welded it together, one piece, for the full length, and we pulled it in with a, what we call pipe bursting. And so in the front of this pipe had a shape of a bullet, had a couple of spears or wedges on the pipe. So as it moved through the clay pipe, it was slicing the clay pipe, and the new pipe was coming in to it. And so that got put in today, and we're doing the tie-ins for the 11 homes that are doing the laterals that connect into that. So it's a new process for us. It's a process that Discovery Bay has used in a few of the storm drains here, primarily in the golf course area, but it is new for us on the wastewater side. At a later date, we may look at it on the water side of the house. And this same street on Discovery Point, we have two issues going on there. One is we have a very small water main, because it was the first part of Discovery Bay, the first section of Discovery Bay started. Well, the water main is very small to compare to today's standards. And then secondly, it's the type of pipe it is, we should look at being replaced. And so that's all I have on that. The second item I have I'd like to bring to your attention is on the wall here. I've got a poster that the Justin Jasper of the University of Berkeley, he's a grad student that's working on the program for our wetlands and the pharmaceuticals. This is a poster that he has put together relating to that and some of his findings so far that I wanted to share with the board. So when you have a moment, take some time, review it, look at it, and go from there. It's just preliminary. It's not a final type of a thing. When they do get a final type of a report, I will share that with the board and the public.
Hey,
any questions?
Most of that $32,000 was trucking costs, correct, bringing that bedrock?
A lot of it was trucking, but also you had to buy the material.
Yeah.
So we the base rock that is approved by the county comes from Clayton. Corey,
sure.
So it's a longer haul. Generally, we buy a lot of our base rock out of Tracy, but I don't know if the county has approved that type of a submittal or not.
Are those tie-ins being done currently, or are they going to do those tomorrow?
No, the tie-ins are being done today.
They're going to work until they're done?
The only tie-ins will not be is the, today will be the, there are three empty lots.
Right.
So we'll do those tomorrow.
It's a long day for those guys.
It is, and our game plan is what we're trying to do is we're under the gun to get this done and final paved by Friday, but we probably won't final pave until Monday. So we asked the county to extend our permit another day or two, and they did.
Great. Thank you. Rick?
It's almost like arthroscopic surgery.
It's cool.
On a sewer line.
Yeah.
It's the cut is, what would a normal cut normally be in a situation like that, the width of it?
Generally, you have to open the trench at least 4 feet, because when you go down to 5 feet and more, there's OSHA requirements of shoring, and so the shoring takes up, and then as you deeper, it's a little thicker shoring, as you probably saw out there. It was really heavy and thick, heavy-duty type of shoring on the pits that were open. And then what you do is the whole road does not have to be open trenched. just a certain pieces of it, and actually one end is where you're bringing in the pipe, and then you open the road in 11 different spots, and you pre-open that, and this is where the home laterals are coming into the existing clay. So as that pipe bursting, when it gets done, you drill a hole into that, and you do a connection into that.
Okay.
And then tomorrow we'll be putting a video camera down, and we'll flood the area with water, let that drain, then we'll be putting a, well, not a flood, but, you know, a bunch of water. And then we'll be putting a video camera down there to just to see how well did it take out the little dips.
Thank you. Rick?
I have nothing else.
That was it? Okay, council?
Yes, I passed out a letter to the board members. This has to do with the board's request as to whether there was incompatibility of offices with city council members sitting on the East Contra Fire Protection District. There is not an incompatibility. Under the Fire Protection District law, when you have incorporated and unincorporated territory, the board of supervisors may be the governing body.
Hold on,
under the Fire Protection District law, when you have territory in incorporated area and unincorporated area, if the city's consent, the Board of Supervisors may be the governing body. And also, there can be an election, or the other method, which is the method they're currently using, is that the county and the cities appoint members. It's proportionally based on the population in the city and in the county area in the district. And that is what's happened. Under the incompatibility of offices rule, it provides that the simultaneous holding of the particular office is compelled or expressly authorized by law, it's not incompatible, and that's what has happened in this situation, because it's authorized by law that you can be both on the city council and on the fire district board. There's no incompatibility of office.
Thank you for that. I believe that Director Pifo has the same concerns that I do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think we may have misguided you on our comments, and I read the letter and I said, that's not really what I was asking. What I'm looking at is their resolution is for them to transition into an independent special district. And at that time of receiving that status, I believe there would be an incompatibility of offices from city council members, and maybe even anyone from this council serving on that board. In other words, you could not serve on two special districts, or you cannot serve on a city and an independent special district.
That is a different question.
Right.
I am confused as to this language of dependent and independent district. Clearly, when the Board of Supervisors is the governing body, it is a dependent district. But however, now they have an appointed board, which is an independent district.
No, it's still dependent.
Well, I'll have to look at the definitions, but nonetheless, they're not an elected board. When they become elected board, that is a different question. But as far as I'm aware, that has not happened yet.
Correct.
I know that the LAFCO executive officer is concerned about this and thinks there should be election, but after my conversations with her, clearly what they're doing right now is permissible.
I agree.
And we agree. I agree, and I agree with your letter. Your letter was very accurate of the current status, and I think maybe I'm guilty, but we're trying to look to jump ahead to say, wonder why they're not moving towards this independent status, because from what my understanding is, they would all lose their seats, with the exception of our two county, because these folks are not elected independently. When they reach that independent district status, then it becomes an incompatibility of office.
If there is an election for whether it's districts or at large, and if city council members run for that office, then they run the risk of forfeiting their city council office.
Right.
But that is something in the future is purely speculative, and I don't think that we should explore that any further at this point, because I don't think the board should be spending money on that.
Through the chair, if I may. I agree. We don't want to chase down a bad situation, but I guess it just begs the question of why, and you heard me ask it earlier, why they aren't moving towards one of their first mandates, which was to become an independent special district. And as long as they drag their feet, they can make decisions on the best interest of the cities of Oakley and Brentwood, which is what we see in front of us. Once they make that transition, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I ask a lot of attorneys, they will not be able to hold both seats. And as you mentioned, they actually forfeit their city council seat. Very interesting dynamic. So I am sure that there's provocation why they're not moving forward.
Well,
I guess it's pretty obvious.
Know, that's pretty much up to the district and their voters. You know, if they vote by districts, the situation probably wouldn't change mm-hmm. because of the population spread. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And I'm good with it for now.
Anything else, Council?
No, thank you.
I just want to make a clear point that this was the first meeting, I believe, Janet, where the agenda was posted in full packet form on the website. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. How about that? We've been talking about it and promising it, and we delivered. So if you want to now read the entire packet, inclusive of all items that are going to be addressed, all that documentation can be read without any editorials, comments, and or information, as it has been in the past on other websites, by just going to the Town of Discovery Bay's website and getting that information there in its factual form. So I would encourage anybody that has that interest to exercise that option. There's going to be some other things coming up real soon with regards to what else is going to be available on the website. But as we begin to use what we've got here, it's just going to get better for the town. So that was kind of out of place, but presidential privilege. Any other comments? I see that we have regular correspondence. Are there any future agenda items that anybody wants placed on the agenda at this point? Okay.
Do you want to just announce that there's opening on the board?
There are three seats that are going to be opening in for next year on the board. Myself, Director Dawson, and Director Pifo's terms are up, and the deadline for the public to fill out a candidate's packet is going to be Wednesday at.
Friday.
Well, it's Friday at 5, but if you're, doesn't it extend for the public?
Friday. No, it's Friday.
Friday at 5 o'clock. So I would encourage anybody that wants to run, it's an exciting place to be. And I would encourage anybody that wants to run for these seats to please get your packets in on your own accord and on your own desire.
Mr. President, if an incumbent doesn't file, that period is extended until the 11th of the uniform district.
Is that how it works? If the incumbent doesn't file?
The incumbent does not file.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
The filing period is extended for that seat.
5 o'clock on Friday. And it's a simple packet, fill out about 5 forms, boom, turned in, done deal. Any other comments, questions, concerns? I hope not. This meeting is now adjourned.
That kind of runs.
Yeah.